mountain, on this side where we're standing, we see the rapids. We see a better picture of that as we go up the steps. So let's go up the steps.
What is that?
That's the side.
Here, babe. Why don't you hold both arms?
Thank you, baby.
Should I take a picture of this? I don't know what it is. You did?
They have coins that were melted here, and only one that was in the planet could melt. make a coin. So these are called Masada coins. Also, we see some jars here that are electric. Were not made on Masada, but they were found on Masada, which means they were thrown at the people up on Masada. We find very close to the ramp many caterpillars, many stones, and those stones were meant to, they, such an effort to make them, to throw them at anyone who tried to come up to Masada. But if they would have thrown there, who would they kill? Their own brothers and sisters. Who would build the ramp? The Roman soldiers? No. They were the one that had to build. Let's stand in the line before another group.
Okay, that's the first episode.
Masada is a mountain, but it is also an historic episode that the talented historian and writer Josephus Flavius wrote about almost 2,000 years ago. His account contains all the elements of a fantastic drama in which Jews, Romans, and idealists fight to the death. It's no wonder that Hollywood jumped at the opportunity to tell this fascinating story. With an impressive set and thousands of extras, they created a colossal film featuring the rebel leader Eleazar son of Yair and the Roman commander Flavius Silva in the leading roles. However, in the movie, unlike real life, no one really deals with the dilemmas and personal struggles, and certainly not with the more problematic aspects of the story. Then where should we start our story? We could start with the Hasmoneans, who were the first to discover the advantages of this isolated cliff in the heart of the desert. Or we could start at the end, with a dramatic project of Masada excavations, with Egalia Dean, the head of the excavation team, who would stand on the mountain and read Josephus Flavius' description of the account, and everyone around him could actually hear the echoes of the fighting. Or we could start the quest with King Herod. Herod, who ruled under the auspices of the Romans, built himself a magnificent fortress here on the mountain, which was to be a sanctuary in troubled times. And believe me, he really had troubles. Herod, like any other king, built his palaces to the highest standards of his day. One of them is this Western Palace. Herod's architect was probably a short guy. Here he built himself a bathhouse, and he would put his lamp here and enter his bath. What can I tell you? This king loved the good life. Until now, we spoke about Herod. It wasn't the splendor of Herod's style that made Masada what it is today. The year is 66 AD. The Jews rebel against the Roman Empire. 4 years later, the temple is destroyed. Jerusalem falls. Everywhere else, the rebels were suppressed. Masada is the last stronghold where there are still Jewish rebels. And believe me, they didn't need Herod's palaces. The rooms in the wall were divided and used as living quarters. They lived from food in the storerooms, and they drank water from the cisterns, kindly left behind by Herod long ago.
Right from the beginning of the excavations, signs of the rebels were found elsewhere, in the palaces, in the ritual baths, and in particular in the wall. The deepest experience I went through in Masada was when they found in this particular room the first piece of scroll. To see Hebrew letters coming out of the ground, the same letters which are used until today. Later, more fragments of scrolls were found. One I found with my own hands, but the first experience is unforgettable.
Throughout the revolt, groups of refugees sought asylum on the mountain. About 1,000 rebels gathered in this fortress in the heart of the wilderness. In 73 AD, the Romans' 10th Legion arrived with thousands of armed soldiers who deployed themselves around the mountain, an enormous war machine. And the movies do it best, after the Romans, of course. The Romans built an attack ramp. The besieged rebels rolled stones down it. The Romans lift a tower to the top of the ramp, equipped with a battering ram to smash the wall. The besieged erect a wood and earthen wall to sustain the blow to the battering ramp. The Romans burn it, but the wind almost burns their own tower. Then the wind veering as if by divine providence to the south, blowing with full force in the opposite direction, flung flames against the wall, which now was all ablaze. And in the evening, when the wall was burnt and breached, The Roman army returned to its camps, assured that the whole affair would be over by morning. But Eleazar had ideas of his own. This is it, the last night. My friends, we've reached the climax of the drama. However, unlike the movie, here apparently the events actually took place. And here at Masada, men with families were forced to decide slavery or death. Eleazar had no doubts, but he had yet to convince his comrades in arms. Ladies and gentlemen, the speech of Eleazar. Oh, my loyal followers, the time has now come that obliges us to make that resolution true in practice. Let our wives die before they are abused, and our children before they have tasted slavery, and preserve ourselves in freedom as an excellent funeral monument for us, as we prefer death before slavery. Once Egaliadine was asked what was the most important artifact he found on Masada. Dozens of priceless objects were found here, he answered. But if I must point to one find, it would be these ostraca. These potsherds. These may be the lots that I'm holding now. Potsherds on which the rebels wrote their names. 10 men who were chosen were the only ones who remained. Their equipment had already burned, and each of them had already killed his wife and children. Then they drew the lots. Who would kill the 9th man and follow his own sword? And in the morning, the Romans arrived. And besides 2 women and a few children, everyone was dead. After the drama came silence. The silence was broken in the 5th century for nearly 200 years by a community of Byzantine monks. 1,200 years later, the first explorers came and rediscovered the mountain. Then the members of the youth movements, seeking a symbol of Jewish heroism, discovered Masada and adopted the mountain. After them came the hikers and the tourists. Masada had become a focus of pilgrimage. Professor Netzer, what do you really think about the act of courage that ended in suicide?
It means the act of courage to prefer death to a life of slavery.
So it's death or freedom?
Yes, death is a free man or slavery in the hands of the Romans. Which choice would you make?
No matter what, Masada has become a symbol of staunch resistance against a fierce enemy. And if it is a symbol, then perhaps this might be some kind of victory. Ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to climb the mountain.
The mountain is made dolomite. Dolomite is a very hard stone. You can break it, you cannot carve it. I'm sorry. And what you see right here, when there was rain on Masada, they gathered the water in aqueduct, and that's excellent aqueduct right here. And look at the cistern for water down here. This is only in case there was rain on Masada. But most of the water is flood water that came from the mountains. Let us go further on. When we went, through the wall of the temple, and when we went to other buildings, we pointed out that Herod adored marble and never had any. So here he could not cut the stone like marble, so he covered it with plaster, and with line of wood, he made the design, then made the line in it, give color, and it does look like marble. Above it is reconstruction, below it is original. Tell you more as we go up here. But we haven't been able to explore our own. No, dear. Okay. I tell you, there's so much I want to show you. So, okay. If you want to do Engedi, if you want to do Qumran and Jericho and Betsy, no. Okay. and stay with me. Right. First, I'll talk about the Dead Sea, because you see it so well from here. And then we'll go chronology, which for that I'll stand in the shade, so I can give you some more. We're standing on Masada. Do you know how high this is? Altitude? Sea level. You are in sea level. This very side, 36 feet. About 36 feet above sea level. So when you look at that and all this height,
wow,
is how below sea level is the Dead Sea, and the same is the depth of the Dead Sea. Even in pictures you can see, in maps, you can see that you have the north and the south, and the middle part is like hand, but they call it the tongue, into the Dead Sea. Today, you almost can cross from one side to another. Mm. If not for the water canal, and you see there are two here, they take water from north end to the south end. The south end is very shallow. They add color to it to absorb more sun, so let the water evaporate. You can see something like two dams, that goes into the water. And this, the one on the left, of course, is Jordan. The one to the right is Israel. And when you look at it, you see that the wall there, you know, is not a complete wall. There's an opening. Do you see what I'm referring to? And why is that? Because they want the water to go from one pool to another. So all these pools are connected, and it all depends of how much minerals, how much water you have. Different minerals sink in the ground. And then they have to use explosive to break it, and then they suck it out to what is called the Dead Sea Works, and then they take it with kind of a it's not exactly a train, kind of a train table thing, to a city up called Arad, which is about 2,700 feet above sea level, because to live here by the Dead Sea is unbearable. Not only that, there are certain times, especially in the Dead Sea Works, there is a siren warning if any chemicals come out. Some chemicals have no smell, so you don't know that it happens. And by the way, Philon, who talks about the people who left us the Dead Sea Scrolls, he said that they made sure that their community would not be too close off to the Dead Sea because of the chemical gas that comes out. Tell you about 2,000 years ago. So we find that. It's a little hazy, but if you look this way, beyond Masada, there are like a mountain here and mountain here, and in between there's a mountain that goes, a range of mountain that goes in an angle to that direction. You're looking at the very mount, which is called Mount Sodom. Mount Sodom, the whole thing, is crystal salt. And because of the Syrian African rift, it was pushed up. And when it was exposed to the surface, the rain made beautiful design or sculptures there, because it dissolved the salt. So you have caves, you have stalactite, you have stalagmite, and each one can pick his own Lot's wife, petite, big, small, everything. So this is Mount Sodom that you see here. Now the question is, was Mount Sodom here? But how come Abraham and Lot could see so far? So maybe it was in the north end. I don't have an answer. They're trying to do some excavation. One thing I can tell you, that, and I was there for like 3 weeks recently, that on the other side, they've done some excavation and they found cities being burned to the ground from that time. So I don't know if it ended here because we do not explore in the north. I don't know. But that's the area of Sodom and Gomorrah. This is concerning the whole area here. Just remember that it's going to be a water canal getting water from the Red Sea down to here. The question is, would the water would mix with the other water? How they're going to handle it? I'm sure one thing, it takes a lot of time for water to mix with the Dead Sea water. Mm. And you saw it very well along the road.
Do they use this water for anything?
Not the water, but the minerals. One thing, this is very, very good for healing, and many things, skin, bones, and other things. And not only that, in many places today we cannot have sun treatment because of all the problems that we have with the air, with the Dead Sea, because it's so low, the air is so thick, it's like filter. And people who need solarium, sun treatment, the best is done right here. I would like to go a little bit to the shade so you can burn them.
Hey darling, that sweater's dragging a little bit, babe.
Oh,
on your left here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, babe.
There you go.
That's where they took the stones to build all the buildings, but that's not enough. Why? You cannot carve the stone. Certain stones had to be carried up to the top. And let's see how this goes.
Babe, why don't we check out the Commandant's resident over here? All right, that's okay. I'll stick with you.
Every drop of water, got enough water for his swimming pool, irrigation, steam room, and
condominium to be available in 2015. You want to get your name on the map?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sure. Refundable deposit, I hope.
May I? May I?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there we go.
That's your chronology. Your chronology. The first time, most probably, this place is mentioned was Mitzadah. His fortress. David said that after he ran from En Gedi, he found shelter in Mitzadah. And maybe that's why they called the place Mitzadah already when they used it later on. During the time of Hezekiah, they used fortresses all along the desert. We don't know if he used Masada or not, but definitely the Maccabees used it as a fortress. It all depends how far the country extended. If the country, for example, Alexander Jannai, and later the what we call Israel, extended to the other side. And you know it very well because there was a place there that was called Machaerus. And in Machaerus, Shalomi asked whose head? John the Baptist's head. I climbed it recently and it's very, very similar to what you see here. It was the one before the last that fell in the hands of Rome. It was a very interesting story. The leader there, he was like a teaser. You know, he used to go to the Roman and make fun of them. And they left him and they let him and they let him. And once they captured him and the whole thing fell in their hand. So what happened in this area? Here we have Herod. His father is an Edomite, Ashkelon. His mother is a Nabatean, Petra. And here is the closest to mummy. He decides to build 22 fortresses. In case of emergency, he would have to run and find a shelter. And he decided this would be the best one for him because only the one who prepared himself ahead of time, he can have water, he can find refuge. And don't forget that this is exactly in one line with Ashkelon, where all his family on the Mediterranean, where all his father's family come from. So he took a place that was built by the Maccabees, and when he declared himself as the king of the Jews, he himself ran to Rome. The uprising started in the Galilee, the area of Arbela, and all that we mentioned it. And he sent his wife, Miriam, what is she? Hasmonean. And he sent her to a palace that already existed. And we know for sure now, because the plaster that was found here and the plaster that was found in Jericho during the Hasmonean period is identical. So she is there, there's a sudden rain, she's saved, and he decided when he comes back, I cannot trust anybody, I'm going to build 22 fortresses in the desert. Some of them, he changed the topography like Herodian, he moved a mountain. Here, it wasn't necessary. He just fortified it, and in case of emergency, he will have everything inside. What do you need? The first thing, water. You cannot rely on water here. We had 11 years, there was not even one drop of water. This year, we had a lot. So the moment you have a lot, you try to get, where do you think will be the gathering place? Look at the topography. You look further down that way. Most of the water will gather down there, but I can't trust that. So what I do, I block the canyon wadi, you know what that is, and let the water to cisterns on the other side. And he had a water gate, and he had 20 donkeys, that their job was to go down, get water, fill up cisterns with water up here. That wasn't a problem. If you know donkeys, you train them, you don't even have to go with them. You put the water in, you let it down on the other side. This is it. But you need food. And he never trusted anybody, so he made sure that the most protected area would be where the storage of food would be. He built a watchtower that you see right behind you, and he knew that if you want your governor or ruler to be on your side, even in good condition. So all this villa that you see right here was built for the one that was in charge of this area. And to make such a beautiful area, you need to have gutters. And there's no way you can cut this dolomite stone. So they carried up the mountain sandstone and covered it with plaster that from a distance looked like marble. In the main Roman camp on the other side, there was a very person that you all know, Josephus Flavius, who served in Mopitia, we talked to you, King Crena, all that. He was with the chief of staff during the uprising, and he wrote, if you didn't see Messiah, you never saw anything like that in your life. Everything is made of marble. What does he tell us? He never came up here. If he would have come up here, he would have seen it's just plain stone covered with plaster. But because he betrayed his own people in the past, he could not face it again. So all these drawings right here, and Herod wanted to show how great he was, that he has water not only for need, but also for fun. And how do you do that? You make three terraces, but look at the topography. The mountain ends like that. So he changed the form of the mountain like he did in the Temple of Jerusalem. I kept telling you the platform and so forth. Isolated himself from the rest of Masada, had some bathhouses, ritual bath, don't forget his wife was real Jewish, and made a guard entrance, look how well fortified it is, and glacis, a wall that you cannot come in. When Josephus Flavius came to this place and excavated this area, the bathhouse, he was shocked. He saw there, Josephus Flavius didn't know it, nobody wrote about it, a mother, a father, and a baby. And it seems they did not want to die with the rest of the people here. The father was holding the wife and the baby with a prayer shawl, as we have the blessing of the high priest. The way they died, that's the way it was found. The way she combed her hair, she had to do this on the side, her little belonging, their clothes, everything like it happened yesterday. You said the one who did the excavation, Galiadin says, wow, now I know what they went through. So here, the North Palace. And then what you do is, you want to have some fun for people who are here. In case you would have a guest, but not in your section, you build a bathhouse. But you make sure that that bathhouse, you know, I can bring in water. What about fuel? What about energy? If you you really want to show how great you are, you have wood to make hot room. And this is the complex that I'll explain it to you later on. What you see here, and there's no need to go inside, these are the guards and the officers that control all the supply right here. When Herod died, four before, what do you think happened here? Roman soldiers know this is empty. Herod doesn't serve them anymore. They have to do the dirty job of taking care of the border. So they come and they occupy the place. So from the year 4 before, and they have no problem of getting supply, they filled up these storerooms with anything you can think of. Food, supply, whatever. But when the uprising started in Caesarea in the year 68, they had no reason to stay here. They had no reason to take the goods out. So a lot of stuff was found here. When the common religious people, we call them zealots, heard that this was left and all this is here, let's use all those 22 fortresses of Herod as a site of refuge. So we have zealots, common religious fighters. They came up here from what year? From the year 68, 70, the bad news came to them. How did they know? They had homing pigeons. People could go in and go. I'll tell you more about it. And all the area on the other side were columbarium, the raised pigeons. Pigeons were used for many things. Food, what they left, fertilizers, look how dry this land is. Water, fertilizers, you can grow anything. And also homing pigeons. So they heard. One by one, the sites fell in the hands of Rome. And in the year 72, we'll talk about it in another place. When the zealots are gone, the Romans lose it again. When Bar Kokhba fight, 132-135, they left it and people of Bar Kokhba came up here. So this is how. Then nothing here much except a group of Christians who came here. They used a church that was built by them. And then there was a group which was called Iconostasis that took off anything that had image in it. So this is the chronology. Now, when the Roman soldiers were here, there's a lot of food, there's no problem. What did the zealots do? They had controlled the food. They took broken pottery and says garbanzo beans, that much. Wheat, that much. Olives, that much. Figs and whatever. And they had kind of what you call ration food. And this is, we find it. When they did the excavation, they found a lot of food still. Now, today, 1964, in the East Storm, and my father was the head of the Ministry of Tourism School and told me, don't you dare be a guide. That's what I'm doing. Down here, he had a little garden, and he showed that you can grow anything. Let's go and see the storeroom.
Psalm 127, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children in the youth. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them, they shall not be ashamed. They shall speak with the enemy.
And put them back again. This storeroom, or this storeroom, was just like this one. They just put the stone back. And that's why the letters of black line underneath original Babbage reconstruction. Let us go further up to the north and look at it. And be trying to imagine those people that are being on stage here, seeing the mountain there, and saying, "Hey God, are you going to do something for us?" I will come to that in a moment. First of all, from here you see all the stolen together. You can imagine how much food could be stored here. There were not only 1,000 people here. There were a lot more here. There was a point, and we'll talk about it, that they had families up here, and there was a point that they decided to let the women and children go. Only very few women and children stayed, with their husband or whatever, and the rest found a shelter. We know that because we found release of marriage here. You can see very well how the siege wall goes around. See it, the line of stone? Three Roman camps, one we stored close to the cable car. Look how many buses now. Look further down to the right-hand side, and you see all the buses. This is one of the large camps, and I wanted you to see the camp because now you can see that Hadrian built Jerusalem like a Roman camp. A square walled city with two main roads, Cardo on one side, David Street from Jaffa to the wall, that divides it to the four quarters, and that's why we have the four quarters of the city of Jerusalem. It is so obvious right there. If you have here the siege wall, and you have 15,000 Roman soldiers, and you don't count yet the people up that they captured, slave servants, try to imagine you're stuck up here, and you see all these people around, and you also see how nice the Roman soldiers behave to the one they captured. Not only that, today is winter. Think about summer. And those Romans were stuck here for 5 years. They had to go and get water. They had to go and get food. They didn't like these people up here. They were looking for revenge. And these people up here knew it very well. Down here, you see the three different levels of the palace. And the ritual bath is the very corner that you see down. This is where the skeletons of the mother, child, and husband were found. This is the door you had, and this is the guard entrance that you had to go through if you wanted to be a guest of marriage, if you did. Let's go to the other side from here.
David, it's a good shot on there for that three levels.
Terrific, thank you.
Small one and big, and this is where Silva, the chief of staff. Why would Rome would bother to send the chief of staff to fight here? Because this was the last of the struggle, and they knew that if they let them go, everything will start from the beginning. So no matter what, they decided to put an end to this uprising. When they did the excavation there, they found salaries, receipt of salaries to Roman soldiers, private letters, a list of soldiers that were sick and what kind of medicine they received. So we learn a lot about the Roman soldier life in the excavation right here. And the cisterns for water were found down here. We're going to go now and see the bathhouse, and then I'll tell you some more. Mm-hmm. going to meet in the hot room called Yardin. So when you go to Eton Yardin, when you want hot coffee, you say Kalder. And we call it a keystone. That's the meaning of a keystone. 2,000 years old. This is not a big deal. You saw one better at Megiddo. And I told you, this is so unusual.
Woe unto you if you are on the error end of that equation. Nice, aren't they?
To see the North Palace. Look, this is ammunition stones that for a reason was not used. And now I want to tell you a little bit more about the story of Masada. So what happened is the worst already happened, the temple is destroyed, and the people were stuck up here, and they said, what are we going to happen to us? Now, there's one rule that was accepted between the first and the second temple period. It was not accepted by the one who stayed in Samaria and we call them the Samaritan, is the way you do the wedding and the way you do the release of marriage. And this is very important because if a woman is married and she has a child from another man, that child is considered to be a bastard. We have a case in court right now that the rabbi said to the father the biological father, don't say anything because he had a child from a married woman, because that child would never ever be able to enter into the Jewish community in marriage. And he says, hey, this is my son. What do you want from me? So just to show you that this regulation even kind of worked today. So what happened is, like in the Holocaust, like here, what happened when family suffered? And what happened, if you don't know, what happened to the husband? If you're left and the husband is somewhere else, you have nobody to take care of you. And you cannot remarry. When we got married, my husband and I, we were the first couple to get married right after the Yom Kippur War. And because I love Bible, and there's a model of the city of Jerusalem, so our wedding was kind of around it. And the rabbi was the military rabbi, because my husband still was in the army. And what happened is that we lost a lot of our friends, and some were injured during the Yom Kippur War. So I got to know the rabbi pretty well. And we were getting ready for the wedding, and so the rabbi said to us, prepare your marriage contract, prepare your marriage contract. And I, who think about that when you get married? But he said to me, no, you have to do it. So I decided I'm not going to make a real thing. I'm going to make something symbolic, because it's something symbolic. So I said to the rabbi, I don't want to write a real currency. The currency in those days was a lira, a pound, because of the influence of the British, which was far ago. So I said to the rabbi, you know what, I will agree to have one if we put only a biblical currency that does not work today. So the rabbi said to me, be careful, Tzipi, because this can hold in court, you know? And I said, don't worry, I'll take care of myself. And in here, don't argue. So my husband started to laugh. So the rabbi said to me, what do you want to write? And I said to him, don't you know what is the currency in the temple? What was it? Shekel. So Ami laughed even harder. And he said, if you want shekel, I'm writing 1 million shekel. So he wrote 1 million shekels. Every 1,000 lira became one shekel. When we had that inflation of 400 something, the rabbi called me and he said, I thought you were innocent. So I'm well together. I'm making a joke. It's not a joke, it's a reality, my reality. And what happened here is we know that women and children left. Because in En Gedi, we find release of marriage. Me, the husband, the name of the husband, release my wife, the name of the husband, the wife. I give you this amount of money. I don't know the exchange and some jewelry, whatever he had. I don't know the exchange rate. If I gave you the wrong amount, write to me, I'll send you the rest of the money. He didn't do it out of anger, or because he didn't like her, or he wanted to divorce her. He wanted to take care of her. He wanted to make sure that everybody knows she's free to marry in case she will be alone and something will happen to him. So when they separated the families in the Holocaust, they knew exactly what they were doing. So this is a little bit about the things that were found here. And the other thing is, how did they die? How did they kill themselves? Because they made the decision, was probably in the synagogue. Each one had to kill the other with a sword. What was the hardest thing for a Jew to do? To kill himself. Not because it's hard to commit suicide, because we're not supposed to do that. God, remember Saul, God gave us life and only he can take it. So they said it will not be us. The fate will be by God. And they made lots. And the actual 11 lots were found in this very room right here. And one of them is the name Yair, which was the leader of the people right here. But they didn't want to die. What happened is, there's the wall, they saw the ramp being built, they fought, they killed their own brothers and sisters who were the one who built the ramp. They said, you know what, we'll build another wall inside. And they made a wooden wall with lots of wood in between and dirt. And they said if they use the battering ram, it will just make it harder. But then they set a flame to it. And they said, They believe till the last minute that God will be on the side. What do you need to do, God? I just ask you to turn the wind around. You know, he said, we are the only one that are free to practice, and you're leaving us alone here? So Rami can. Ma. Lo. Mi efo. לא, באיזה שעה? לא. לא, 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 אז אנחנו יורדים. אוקיי, תודה. ביי. We have to be quick because there's working on the road and he wouldn't call for nothing. So we'll do it real quick. Okay, so... Sure. So... Mind helping?
Turn the wind.
I turn the wind. So what happened was the wind for the beginning kind of turned a little bit. And then it didn't take long, and the whole inner wall went up in flame. And he knew that the next day, the Roman soldiers are going to be here. What happens to the waterfall in the hands of Rome? They decided not to. Anyone who wants to go with me, real quick, you wait for us right here. The next stone you see here was carried up the mountain. It's not all the square stones.
They didn't have the steps either.
Right.
I mean, the children must have just lived here. Hey, you get children back and forth.
We're coming. Shouting out loud, and you heard the echo. But the guide was trying to see or to do to show you that there was some kind of communication, not always for good words, between the main Roman camp and here. We see the difference between a large camp outside and part of the wall. This Roman camp was the chief of staff, and that's why there's an inner wall within the wall. And I think this is an excellent shot of the ramp, even though it was wider and higher and reached up to the top. All the skeletons that were found here were buried in the little hill that you see there with a blue sign. Mm-hmm. And you see a wadi, and now you know what's a wadi. Mm-hmm. The wadi was blocked right here, and the water reached down here into huge cisterns of water. Of course, the Roman soldiers tried to destroy that, but already they had water here. We even see ammunition stone, the big stone, right there. Let me show you how the water system works. Therefore, the water will gush down through the wadi. And what he did, he blocked the water in two aqueducts, one here and one here, use a huge cistern, bigger than the one they found here, about 12 of them, And when it rained, this is what happened. The water got along this aqueduct and then on into each and every cistern from one to the other. But the overflow came on the slope of the mountain. The water to Jericho till today go this way. And what's so beautiful is in this valley, in this canyon, you see green stripes. So try to imagine those women hardly have any water, and they see this green stripe. Herod to Jericho made an artificial waterfall because he had a problem crossing a canyon. So he pushed the water down with gravity, and that power pushed the water up. They didn't know how to use siphon, and it continued on to the city of Jericho. Water system. Let's go back this way. Fire, so all the mud and debris and dirt will not come in. Then they had to let the dirt sink and the better water go to the next one. We'll see it very well when you go to Qumran. And when the donkey came in, they had to get rid of the water. And we see a lot of cistern for water right here. And they had built on the upper part a ritual bath that only the better water will go in. Here we see a synagogue. And when the excavation took place here, then he saw this. He saw that this was used as a stable because he saw what animals leave behind. And he said that you would not build something like that for animals. So he kept digging and he found the benches. You've seen so many synagogues. He said, there's only one thing that I can find here to prove this is a synagogue that I cannot find anywhere else, and that's the icon. In this very room, number 7, and 7A, these two, he found every single book, not the whole, just a little piece, because they left it to say we were here, we followed the word of God. When he came to excavate in this room, facing toward Jerusalem, in the very corner, he found a little scroll, and it was a vision of the dry bones. As these people said, we're going to perish, we're going to die, our bones are going to remain here, we're coming back. And maybe that helped them to make this horrific, terrible decision. We used to have the soldiers coming up here, giving an oath to the country. If Israel was in existence prior to 1948, a lot of people could be saved here. Not only from the Holocaust, from Arab countries and what they went through later on. And that's why we have a say, Mitzada, Mitzada, Lo Tipol Shanit. Masada, Masada will never fall again. We don't do it anymore. But we bring children that are bar mitzvah, that read the Torah for the first time as children, and they bring them here. And that's what you see around you. Okay?
I thought they were about that age.
Yeah.
Do you make them climb the mountain?
My son, the old time boat went everywhere. Large and so on. This is a typical Hasmonean motif, the rosetta, the belly button that was used also on the Holy Ark. When the Zealots came here because of gap of so many years, they thought Herod did it, so in spite of, they distorted it with adding this bathtub here, turning the frigidarium into a ritual bath, like you see right here. But the nicest room was like the triclinium. Remember the triclinium that we saw in Sipori with all this gorgeous, delicate, classic mosaic? Let's see this one here in the desert. Here is the two canals from here. When we stand here, it's so hard to believe that there's 1,300 feet from here to here in the night. Look how delicate this triclinium would be. Look at all the geometric. You see how it was done? But you see this immense city there? And we should have not seen that because this is where they used to put the table of the scrolls, right? That is a synagogue. And if you look, there are some rooms around it. So it was a courtyard, an area within Masada. No different than the Last Supper Room. The Last Supper Room, which we were before, and I told you it could be with this kind of people because it was only meant by the well, it could have been a similar complex like this in Jerusalem, isolated from the rest of the people. This is Masada. We're going to go back to the cable car, and I want you to see a little bit of the canyon that's lining